Welcome to Valley Voices, where we bring you conversations covering all things local, from news, politics and government, to culture and community issues that are relevant to Lehigh Valley residents. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, the executive director here at WDIY. This episode, we will be speaking with Ian Panico, the new executive director of NAMI Lehigh Valley. And we're going to get into what NAMI means right off the bat. It's N-A-M-I. So welcome to the show, Ian. Now, first question, what does NAMI mean?
National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Ah, okay. All right. So congratulations
Thank
on the
you.
New executive Thank director you. Position. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got to this role.
So I started in mental health in the Valley 14 and a half years ago. I began working as a frontline recovery coach, is what we called them at the time, for a program in the Valley, local on Southside Bethlehem, and very quickly moved up from recovery coach to recovery coach supervisor to assistant director and director of a program. And I was the director of a mental health program funded by Northampton County block grant dollars for 9.5 years until I applied for the position at NAMI Lehigh Valley after hearing about the incoming retirement of Maggie Murphy. And I'm happy to say that I started on May 4th.
Okay. So little under 2 months.
Yes.
Okay.
Very new to the
and
role.
And the first 2 months are so much fun, aren't they?
It's been a blur.
Yeah, it's drinking from the fire hose. What drew you to the field of mental health?
So I feel like, as with most people that have been working in mental health for a long time, so let's say it's 15 years for me, just I'll round up for good measure. You know, the people that have stuck with this field for a really long time tend to be people that are personally affected by it. So I have my own personal mental health issues, as well as family, you know, mental health issues going on. So back in 2009, 2008, sometime in the early 2000s, my brother experienced a, you know, psychiatric crash. So he had developed schizoaffective disorder. We didn't know as a family, you know, early on what was going on. He was a Penn State 4.0, you know,
wow.
Main campus student, astrophysics major, really, really bright, you know, had a psychotic break, wow. Developed mental illness. And at the time I was going to art school, like I was, you know, ended up leaving art school, coming back home. And then I started taking courses at a community college.
Huh.
I took an abnormal psychology course, you know, out of interest when I was just kind of floating along, figuring out what was going on with family and everything. You know, being a young, you know, mid-20s adult who wasn't exactly dedicated to school at the time. I think I went to a total of 3 colleges and I finally graduated from Kutztown, you know, go Bears. So at that time when I was going to Bucks County Community College, and I took a class in abnormal psychology. Dr. Fallon Klein was the doctor. I'll never forget her.
Mm.
And I absolutely fell in love with psych. Like I the idea of abnormal brains and the way that things are working and the way that people are perceiving different things and diagnoses just drew me in. So then I ended up going to Kutztown University for clinical counseling psychology and stayed in the field for 15 years because, you know, I was drawn to it. And again, the people that stay in the field for a long time tend to be the ones that are personally affected by it.
Yeah.
Difficult work. It can be very challenging. It can be completely unrewarding. It's the pay is garbage.
Yeah.
You know, people don't really understand what you do. And then there's a lot of stigma around mental health. So, you know, just talking to people about the populations you serve, people just don't understand it until they understand it. That's kind of what drew me to the work and has kept me in the work for 15 years now.
Wow. So interesting. I had the complete opposite experience, dealt with mental health personally on a really, really intense level as an adolescent. Went to college to be a psych major.
Yeah.
Thought I wanted to help kids.
Yeah.
I changed my major in the middle of freshman year. I was like, yeah, I can't do this.
Kids are hard.
And I've stayed as far away from any kind of nonprofit work that involves mental illness because I can't. It's too close.
Yeah.
So I admire people who can do that in the field. What attracted you specifically to NAMI and made you say, yes, this is where I want to go next with my career?
Oh, that's a great question. So it's interesting. So as I was approached about this position, I chat with my parents as much as I possibly can. Keenly aware of the passing of time. So, you know, any opportunity I get to talk to them, I'm going to talk to them because one day, you know, people just aren't around. So I talked to them a lot and I was talking to them about this opportunity. I've been aware of NAMI in the Valley for a while. Like I said, I've been in the field for a long time. So when I was approached about this, I'm chatting with them, and something that came up was when my brother was first experiencing mental illness and they really weren't quite sure what was going on, they ended up going to a family-to-family class at NAMI. Mm. I was not aware of that at the time. You know, I was probably like, I think I was 19 years old, 18 years old, so I was off doing my own thing, which was probably not good. And, you know, wasn't aware of what they were doing as a family, but knowing that that was one of their first contact points for, you know, trying to find support or figure out what's going on with my brother, you know, was one of those things of like, oh, maybe this is the right fit. You know, NAMI checked a lot of boxes for me. You know, I operate independently. You know, I worked in a corporate environment for a long time. So the company that I was working for previously had a corporate structure, but I still had that independence.
Yeah.
And I know enough about the field to know what I would be getting into at other locations and other, you know, other direct care organizations. So NAMI was still is still involved in mental illness. I mean, clearly, this that's our bread and butter. This is what we do. It has the advocacy component to it. So very interested in that. I've always been very outspoken about, you know, what our people are going through and the rights that they deserve to have respected. So, you know, putting all those things together and having that independent ability to drive NAMI where, you know, NAMI Lehigh Valley, where I feel like we need to go, to me was very appealing. I keep myself busy.
Yeah.
And I'm the type of person that when things are going well and everything's organized, I'm going to get bored.
And
and I need to take on like another project.
Yeah.
The structure that I was in previously wasn't really conducive to that. So NAMI is, you know, if I can get things going, get things organized and get a new program off the ground, everything's, you know, great. Then there's the opportunity to say, okay, that's good. Let's do something more. Let's outreach more. Let's start a new program. Let's see what the community wants and be able to create something that's sustainable and continues to grow.
Okay. So that leads right into my next question. You know, 45 days in or so, do you have or have you identified yet kind of a vision or where you see the organization going, or is it too early for that?
Well, it's not too early. The board pre-identified it for me.
Oh, okay.
Coming in, one of the initiatives that had been started prior to coming in, which I wish they had just waited like a month or two, that would have been nice, you know, was to enhance our services and provide services to the Spanish-speaking community.
Oh, right.
So NAMI Lehigh Valley doesn't currently provide any services to the Spanish-speaking community.
Wow.
I have one person on staff that's bilingual. She works for a totally different program and isn't involved in the NAMI signature programs. So we are underserving our population for Spanish speaking in terms of services. We are into our Spanish speaking initiative, and I'm hoping to get it off the grounds completely by this summer.
Wow.
We're using some other resources with some other NAMIs that they're already providing programs that we just don't have the capacity for. So we're just going to kind of piggyback off of some of the stuff they're doing while we're getting facilitators trained so that we can host our own Spanish speaking initiatives and Spanish speaking programs.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So that's step one. Take care of what we currently have committed to and make sure we get those things off the ground. And then we will be developing a strategy, a strategic plan going forward of where we want to see things. There are places that I would like to go. One of the biggest ones is expanding CIT, which is crisis intervention teams. It is being supported by Northampton County Mental Health. We currently have a part-time person doing CIT training. It is providing mental health training to officers so that they understand what's going on if somebody's experiencing a mental health crisis, if somebody's maybe symptomatic. It doesn't circumvent their current procedures. It's just something to enhance their current procedures and allow them that if a conversation can go differently, to take that conversation to a different place so that situations don't escalate and people don't get harmed when it's unnecessary for them to get harmed. Every officer that I've talked to, campus resource officers, police officers, you know, correctional facility officers, they are all really, really interested in this. Chiefs of police are very interested in it, are very supportive of it. I think they recognize the need and really want it. And to me, that's something that I really want to work on expanding with NAMI Lehigh Valley as well.
Okay.
Because it's important.
Oh,
and
God,
it's super necessary for our community.
Yeah, absolutely. So we hear more people talking openly about mental health and kind of trying to break through that stigma. But many still struggle to find help. There's a lack of providers.
Absolutely.
The cost is a barrier, and then finding the right person.
Yep.
What are you seeing in our community right now?
I mean, I can't deny that there's a lack of providers and that there's major barriers to mental health right now. The things that I'm seeing, though, that are positive is that people are talking about it. People are asking for more. People are pressing for more. I sit in, I've sat in for a number of years on a lot of meetings with some of our funders where, you know, the community is invited in to talk about what they want to see. I sat in on one with Northampton County Mental Health just 2 weeks ago, and it was significantly more populated than it's ever been before. So seeing people that are speaking up and coming around the table for these things is really important to me. Seeing places like City of Bethlehem, what they're doing with their community outreach and understanding with mental health and working with nonprofits in the community, to me is really exciting that, you know, people are getting creative about seeing what services they can work with and what they can get in their area by navigating relationships with different nonprofits that may have access to different funds. I personally feel like everybody should automatically have access to everything, healthcare included.
Right.
Like that is, and I should say this is my this is my personal opinion, not necessarily reflecting of NAMI or NAMI National. So,
yeah.
You know. But people need access to healthcare.
Right.
People need access to medical services. Mental health services need to be included in that. Mental health services need to be looked at the same as healthcare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the barriers to people having to put money up front to get access to healthcare are so great. We are in a very wealthy country that we have the ability to do this ourselves.
Yep.
And we need to pool together to do this ourselves. So,
yeah.
But, you know, I see people becoming more and more creative. I see people speaking out. I see people coming together trying to get these things off the ground. And I see people, you know, starting to think a little bit more strategically about what they can offer and become a little bit more focused in, you know, providing certain mental health resources. I had a conversation literally yesterday with somebody from a new healthcare provider. I'm not going to name them by name. It was very, very empowering to hear, this is coming from a hospital, to hear them talk about wanting to know what the people that are in mental health services want from their services, how they can improve those things, and hearing that the language coming directly from their CEO is flat out stating, we are not going to do things this way just because they've been done that way. We are going to provide better services. But hearing conversations coming from places like a hospital network where they are very cognizant of the fact that people have been underserved in certain networks, that maybe referrals aren't being completed to services properly, or people are being discharged without proper care plans in place, and making that commitment from the top down, bottom up is really, really, you know, exciting to hear.
Yeah. I do want to get into NAMI's services and programs because I do think this is such an important thing for our community to know. But I also want this last question just on mental health itself. What are some of the biggest misconceptions people still have about mental illness and seeking support?
The biggest misconception is that people are alone in it. One of the great things I keep hearing at NAMI, you know, every conversation I'm in is, you know, that you're not alone, you know, and this message of you are not alone being really, really important. Mental illness is really isolating. Growing old is isolating, like society is isolating. So then when you include mental illness on top of that, it's even more isolating. And we have data to back this up. When people are experiencing something, they feel like they're alone. And the reality is people are not alone in this. You know, 1 in 5 people a year are diagnosed with an actual diagnosed mental illness, right? So 1 in 5 people get a diagnosable mental illness, which is significant. Just knowing that alone, you can already speculate and you can already project out that more than 1 in 5 actually experience mental illness because people, again, as we're talking about access to healthcare services, people are not going to get an actual diagnosis. People are trudging through. People are just dragging through their days. People are dying because they're not receiving the care that they need. So, you know, we know that it's more than the 1 in 5 population that the actual statistics show.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're going through it, it doesn't feel that way. So, you know, the thing that I would really want people to know is that there are resources out there, you know, even if it's a little bit, like anything is going to help. But just reaching out to peer networks, reaching out to agencies so that you know that you're not alone and other people go through these things as well is hugely important because, you know, when you're in it, it doesn't feel that way.
Right.
You know, everything is a struggle just to get through the day.
Yep.
But you are not alone.
Right. So for listeners who may not be familiar with NAMI, what are the services? What do you provide? What's the mission?
Yeah, so I mean, the mission of NAMI is advocacy, education, support, and public awareness. You know, we provide services for free. So our services are out there for anybody. We do not take insurance whatsoever. Mm. We collect absolute minimal data, you know, so that we can make sure that we're providing services barrier free. But the services that we are currently offering, we do have a peer-to-peer support group that meets online. We have a family-to-family support group. We are doing some educational courses coming up in the fall. So we run 8-week education courses. The ones we are running in the fall, we will be running a peer-to-peer educational course, and we're going to be running a family-to-family educational course. We also do hospital wellness, where we have somebody going into a hospital and actually engaging directly with the people that are currently on an inpatient floor, potentially in an outpatient program, to make them aware of the resources. We take calls throughout the day, you know, just to provide the direction that people may need when they're navigating, you know, mental health resources. And, you know, we promote and educate and combat stigma, right? What we're doing now, having the conversations about mental health and making sure people know that they're not alone and that these resources are out there for them. Pushing legislation to make sure that people have better access to resources and that mental health resources are available to the public.
And I think one of the things that maybe people don't know and really should know is that your services are completely free.
Yes, absolutely.
That's removing a barrier right there.
Yes, absolutely. And our services are volunteer run.
Oh, they're volunteer run?
Volunteer run.
So our like our station.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, NAMI's super grassroots.
Wow.
Super grassroots.
So these are professionals in the field who have a day job somewhere.
These are trained volunteers in the field who have a job theoretically. Or they don't, or they're retired and they're looking to give back to their community.
So you train them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if anybody's interested in volunteering for NAMI, I'm not sure what we can plug, but
yep,
I will plug NAMI
plug
Lehigh
that.
Valley. Go to NAMILehighValley.org, you know, check us out, and we do have a link to get interested in volunteering. Please outreach us. We are looking for volunteers for our educational courses. We're looking for volunteers to help us table events. We're looking for volunteers for general help. We can't do it alone. So, you know, please, if you're interested, come see us.
Is that who's answering the phone? Volunteers?
No,
Okay.
We do have a couple staff, I do mean a couple as a couple.
Okay. So tell me about your two staff members.
So we do have a full-time director of programs and volunteers, and we have a part-time admin assistant, and then we have a part-time CIT coordinator, and then myself.
Wow.
And that is who we have.
That is incredible. Now, tell us about your peer support groups. Who are they designed for, and what can someone expect when they attend?
They can expect a stigma-free environment, which is really great. And I guess we should talk about peers and what that really means, too. So we use the term peer a lot in the mental health field. And a peer is somebody who has experienced mental illness themselves and, you know, are identifying themselves as somebody that has experienced mental illness. So our peer-to-peer support group is run by peers and offered to peers and is a place for them to come together, talk about things that are going on, you know, get resources if necessary and connect to other people that are maybe going through similar things so that they know that they're not in it alone and that they can troubleshoot some things and maybe get connected to some, you know, bigger resources or better resources.
Okay. And you mentioned there's several, right? One of those peer groups is specifically for families and caregivers. Why is it so important to support not just the individual experiencing mental illness, but their entire support system?
Yeah, because, I mean, we could go back to the, like, you're not alone phrase. I mean, and we can double down on that. And, you know, when somebody's going through a mental health issue, you know, not only are they not alone, but, like, their family is also going through it as well. So they might be the ones experiencing it, but their families are also experiencing it vicariously. So if you're supporting a son or a daughter or an aunt or an uncle or a father or mother, right, you know, or a friend, you don't know what you don't know. You know, you need to be able to understand what you need to do to take care of yourself. You need to understand the barriers that you may need to put in place. And you need to understand what kind of resources and help that you can offer. You know, the really hard part about mental illness, too, is that nobody can require you to get help unless you are a danger to yourself or others. You know, and there are very strict criteria around that. And when somebody's struggling, there's a whole spectrum that people are going to be struggling on, from the point of where, you know, maybe people aren't getting out of bed at all throughout the entire day, or maybe people are they're working full time, they're going through their lives, they have a family, they have children, but they're just going day to day and they're not really living as much as they're surviving. So making sure that families that are going through it as well know what they can and can't do to support their family members, or know that there's support for them as well, and that other people experience this as well, is really critical. You know, support networks are really important.
Yeah. So I know NAMI also works with schools and young people through programs like Ending the Silence. Tell us about that.
There are NAMI flagship programs where, you know, these are courses that NAMI teaches to facilitators that they have vetted. They're shown to be evidence-based courses. There are very strict requirements around the volunteers and educators that run these courses. Those are NAMI flagship programs. We have Dr. Dennis Geiger, who is a trained speaker for Ending the Silence, goes into schools and teaches people how to tell their story. And it's tricky because schools are really afraid. People are really afraid to have this conversation. There's this thought, or I'm going to say misconception. There is this misconception that speaking about suicide is going to put the thought in people's head. And that is absolutely not true. There's stigma, right? People are afraid of what they don't know. I mean, like, that's human nature. People get afraid of things that they're not aware of. So it's tough sometimes to, you know, get into schools and teach people that we can have these conversations because people are afraid that it's going to spark something or somebody's going to get a thought. And the reality is, if somebody's thinking of suicide, they're thinking of suicide. Like, that's the bottom line. If somebody's not thinking of suicide, they're not going to get the thought put in their head and say, oh, that sounds great. It's not a good idea. It's a very bad idea. So, you know, getting into schools and teaching people, again, that they're not alone, that these things are normal, and making sure that they understand that there are resources out there for them so that they're not so isolated and they reach out for help before things get too bad. That's kind of the purpose of that program.
Okay.
That's the hard part about the peer stuff. Like, I've talked about this with a few people before, is that you can get these programs started in schools, but then people get older and not in the school anymore.
Right.
It's like you have to constantly be going in and getting people to run these things.
There is an organization that is in the schools.
Is it Avitum?
Yes.
I've worked with Avitum before. Okay. So I also put on one of the planners of the Lehigh Valley Mental Health Awareness Walk. WDOI comes out to it every year.
Yeah.
You know, and we do have volunteers from Avitum are coming out. And the Avitum clubs are really well perceived.
What I was going to say. When you're talking about the stigma, I feel like the kids these days are much more open than any of us ever were in our... For someone listening who feels overwhelmed and doesn't know where to turn, what would you say to encourage them to make that first call or send an email?
Yeah, you don't even have to come to us. I mean, 988 is a resource that we have in Pennsylvania. I would say that is the biggest one that people can turn to just to talk. There's also a text line. I want to say it's 15151. I would say the biggest thing is, again, it doesn't have to be us. Like, I hope it is, but also, like, if you need help, contact 988. Whether or not you think it's a big deal or not, 988 is a suicide and mental health crisis line that Pennsylvania currently operates. It's everywhere in Pennsylvania, and you can text 988. You can also three-way call 988. So if you're somebody supporting somebody and you're concerned, you can patch somebody in, and you can do a three-way call with 988, and they will connect you to emergency services if necessary. Or they're just available to talk and work through an issue or potentially connect you to services in the area. So, I mean, if you are experiencing a mental health crisis or a pre-crisis where you really feel like time is of the essence, you know, contact 988. That is what it's there for. Pennsylvania is pushing to expand it. It's been very, very well received within the state of Pennsylvania. And I heard this just last week, is that Pennsylvania has the second largest 988 network in the country. So we are second to California for the 988 network. But in general, if they're looking for additional services or want to get involved or just are seeking help, they can contact us at NAMI. 882-1202 is our number. Or they can find us online and outreach us, and we will absolutely work to get people connected to the best possible services in the area so that they can keep moving forward and that they can live their lives to the fullest. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. So that kind of led in right into my next question, which was that does NAMI provide help in finding resources like counseling, housing, financial assistance, crisis services?
Yes.
Yes.
And we actually have a resource guide as well. So we can send somebody a resource guide, which outlines a lot of the services in the area. It's not completely comprehensive because once you put something into writing, it's already outdated. So I will say that, but it will get people the right direction. And we're also very well-trained people that understand how to access resources in the Valley. And if we don't know it, we will find out for somebody and we'll get them connected.
Okay. Let's talk in this next couple of minutes that we have here about the advocacy. So tell us what issues you're advocating for in the Lehigh Valley right now and on what level, state, federal, county,
I've spoken with two legislators within the past month about access to mental health resources. And the hard reality is, in the political climate that we're in, we are in such an uphill battle to do any sort of actual legislation to enhance mental health resources. Our county-based dollars have been flat for a decade. So a lot of these county programs that are really important have been flat for an entire decade, which is money that was created from the closure of the Allentown State Hospital and the state hospitals across Pennsylvania. And, you know, the need continues to increase and the dollars have not increased. There are some services that are getting increases. And at the same time, we're now fighting cuts that are coming to Medicaid expansion programs. So. Right. Currently, I'm advocating for people to understand, if they're included in the Medicaid expansion, that they're going to have to re-enroll twice a year. You know, they're going to have to do it every 6 months for re-enrollment to make sure that they continue on their benefits. And that is going to put a massive burden on the state. It's going to put a massive burden on our county assistance office. And people are unfortunately going to fall through the cracks just because of bureaucracy. People are just not going to get their applications processed quickly enough and fall through the cracks. So currently pushing to make sure people are aware that this is happening, because it's happening. From January 1st, the Medicaid expansion is going to, you know, in Pennsylvania, is going to have additional requirements. The state is currently working on rolling out, you know, some of the things that they can control and some guidelines that they have around, you know, how things are going to be processed. But people really need to be aware if they're affected. And people need to understand that when they're contacting their counties for services, that these are counties that have been providing services to a larger and larger population year after year with the same amount of dollars that they were getting 10 years ago, if they're lucky.
Right.
You know, so, you know, advocating at the state level and people writing their legislators to push for more base dollars for our counties is super necessary. But unfortunately, we are in a political environment right now where it is absolutely something that, you know, legislators don't want to press and, you know, are having a hard time even considering it.
We're fortunate in the Lehigh Valley to have a representative, Mike Schlossberg, who is a great advocate for mental health services. So, you know, we have that at least going for us. What role do partnerships with schools, healthcare providers, businesses, and community organizations play in improving mental health in our region?
I mean, I think the big thing is awareness and communication. Something that's, you know, I've experienced working in mental health for 15 years is some of the problems that we experience, you know, in our services are just a lack of communication. So, you know, again, going back to the you don't know what you don't know, somebody could be providing services or somebody could be providing assistance, say schools or, you know, mental health organizations or nonprofits, and they might not even be aware of a problem that's going on. So getting these people all around the same table to have these conversations increases their awareness of, you know, and perspectives and different perspectives on issues, which creates, you know, collaboration and brainstorming, you know, and, you know, we're a lot stronger together when we think about these things. So seeing people come together and having these conversations is really important.
Okay, so we're almost out of time, and I feel like I could talk about this for an hour or more. But if listeners remember just one thing from today's conversation, what would you want it to be?
I would want it to be that they're not alone. You know, that if you're experiencing any sort of mental health issue, if you're experiencing any sort of struggles, just understand, you know, it's unique to you in that, you know, your personal experiences are your personal experiences. But you're not alone, and other people go through similar or the same issues, you know, and it's complicated and it's distressing and it makes everything harder. And it can be better, you know. So reach out for help, get the support, talk about these things, advocate for more supports, you know, advocate for better, you know, for better access to resources. There are certainly people in the higher up positions that are interested in supporting these things. Like you mentioned, you know, our local representatives, there are people that are fighting this good fight. But if they don't have the voices behind them, they're never going to get there. So you got to raise that voice up.
Yep. Well, you've been listening to Valley Voices here with the new executive director of NAMI Lehigh Valley, Ian Panico. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about this really important, critical issue in our community. If you'd like to listen again, you can go to wdiy.org or wherever you get your podcasts.